Okay. Just following up on what Louis said, again, we're the Environmental Modeling Center, and the modeling enterprise is based on the global observing system. You can't forget about the observations. You have to have high-powered computing, and that includes not just the computations, but data dissemination, and also display and manipulation of the information on the decision support end. And then the data simulation modeling, and I've added ensembles and post-processing, because it really is an end-to-end enterprise that we have to deal with when we talk about modeling. It's just not a it's not a dynamic core, it's not just the land surface physics, it really is an integrated end-to-end process that has to be taken into account. So when we look at the production suite, it's all of these elements that are incorporated into it. And the production suite, by the way, is really based on fundamental science. All the components of the production suite are basically peer-reviewed in the scientific literature and are world-class systems. Okay, and why do we do operational NWP or operational modeling at NOAA? Again, we're an operational agency. We have an operational mission. I think we are the only federal agency that has prediction in its mission. We're not NASA. We're not NSF. They are not responsible for operational deliverables. And the models themselves don't necessarily have different metrics. However, the forecasters in the field, the decision makers, or provide information to decision makers, do have metrics that are tracked. And we know that the Operation Numerical Guidance is a tool set to the forecasters. They use that information, they know what tool to pick, they know how to use the tools, and the better informed they are about the tools that they have access to, the better they're going to be able to inform their customers about decisions that need to be made. So the numerical guidance that we provide here through NSEP, that comes not just from NSEP, but from our NOS, our OAR laboratories, is really a foundational tool that's used not just by the National Weather Service and by NOAA, but it's used by academia and private industry to support their mission. So it really is a very fundamental piece of the U.S. economy. So what we do here is extremely important, and I think the majority of people in this room know that. But it's nice to remind ourselves about that every once in a while. This is a production suite, and this diagram shows the complexity of it. No other operational center has this scope for the operational production suite like we do here in the U.S. Nobody comes close to this. European Center, UK Met, Environmental Canada, we have the most complicated, broad-scope production suite in the world. And the reason I put this diagram up is it shows all the interconnectivity between the pieces. These are not run-alone systems. So each broad box represents a major component of the production suite, like the NAM, the SHREP, the GFS. But also important are the components in red. We have multiple modeling systems and data simulation systems that we have to support. All the blue boxes, or the, I should say the blue shading in some of the major boxes, are systems that have a data simulation attached to them. So the point here is that we try to reduce the amount of overhead that we have when we build and we maintain and develop this production suite. The GSI is the common data simulation system in the production suite. We have a number of different dynamic cores. The Global Spectrum Models is in the global right now. The NMMB, the ARW are part of the regional systems. ICOM is run for the ocean, forced by GFS. MOM4 is in the CFS. You've got a number of different models for surge and slosh, and even ecosystems and bay models. We have a number of different modeling systems that support, that are used for bay modeling, for example. So this is a difficult thing to manage, and it's becoming more complex over time. So what we have to worry about going forward is there a way to satisfy emerging requirements and yet try to consolidate and simplify the production suite before it gets out of control? The yellow box is the global forecast system. The reason I highlight that is because it touches just about every other downstream system in the production suite. So in terms of priorities, the better that system is in terms of performance, not just 500 millibar height, but other important parameters such as 10-meter wind speed, 2-meter temperature, precipitation, those sorts of details that really matter to people, and the details that matter to the downstream systems, the better the production suite's going to be. So it's really important to look at where the linkages occur across the whole spectrum. This is what the production suite looked like on the IBM P6 when it was about end of life. It was about a year ago, and it was pretty much static for a year while we transitioned to the new supercomputer. Each color represents a major component of the production suite. So for an entire year, we really had no room to grow the production suite on the operational computer. We spent a lot of our time transitioning to the new system, and this is where we ended up after the new WCOS went live in July of this past year. That was a big effort that involved a lot of people, took a lot of time, millions of lines of code that had to be verified to make sure that it's running as we expected to. Took a lot of time and effort going laterally, so we can now start to fill that white space with improvements to the production suite. So what are the improvements going to be? I know this is an eye chart, but it just shows some of the major systems that we have planned for upgrading within the next year. All the major systems, the GFS, GDAS, GEFS, the NAM, the RAP, the SHREF, are planned to be upgraded in the next year. We're pretty aggressive. We want to get the high-resolution rapid refresh into operations a year earlier than we thought we could. All that depends upon the sequential implementation of upgrades like the RAP-V2, for example. So we're back in the implementation mode, but we can't get too anxious. We can't cut corners in our pre-implementation testing to get these things into operations. That is a recipe for disaster. So we have to be very careful and systematic in our pre-implementation testing. And it's not all done within EMC. We don't own all the systems. GSD, for example, owns the RAP and the HERC. They're responsible for the majority of the pre-implementation testing, scientific testing, verification that goes into the development of those systems. We kind of get it late in the game, verify everything that they've done, and then move that into operation. So we've got a full plate here in terms of what we want to upgrade in the next year. And this will fill up the white space on the WCOS. And the next phase of the WCOS comes in FY15. So this is all the things we want to do in the next year. One thing I want to talk about is, we talked about the 500 millibar anomaly correlation. And what this diagram shows, it's a frequency diagram, percentage of what we call a good forecast, where the anomaly correlation for the northern hemisphere at day 5 is 0.9 or greater. And the reason I show this is it runs time across the bottom from 96, where the red bar is, the higher the bar, the more good forecast that we had from the system. So hopefully over time you'd expect those red bars to increase in length over time. And of course that's what's happening. If that didn't happen, we weren't doing our job. Now, we'll say up front that 500 millibar anomaly correlation is not the only thing we look at, but it's very important from a legacy perspective. Improvements in the 500 millibar anomaly correlation typically result in improvements in circulations, storm tracks, baroclinic systems, all the details that matter to people on the ground. The point I want to make here is that the evolution of the improvements in the global forecast system come from a number of things. It's not just one thing. It's not just satellite data. It's not just aircraft data. It's a number of things that range include resolution increases, but also physics increases. Physics, I think, is a very important part of the equation that we as a NWP or a modeling community has kind of lost sight of. You can get a lot of improvements in the quality of your prediction system through physics. And then from a data simulation perspective, the best thing for a data simulation system is a good model. Those two things go hand in hand. They're not separate. So the point I want to make here is that in setting priorities for the development of the systems includes data simulation, modeling, which includes physics, resolution, and dynamics, and then the post-processing of that information in terms of ensemble-based systems, developing the ensembles, composition of the ensembles, and the post-processing associated with it, which includes the loss, for example. That's the end-to-end system. So again, all these things are enabled by high-performance computing and a robust observing system. All three of those things in synergy have to be balanced. If they get out of balance, then we start to run into some trouble. Okay, Hurricane Sandy of 2012, that was a true national disaster for the U.S. And from a weather prediction perspective, there was a lot of attention given to the fact that the ECMWF model captured the left hook towards the coast sooner than the U.S. model. There was a lot of discussion about that. And these are just some clips that have been on, in the blogosphere, on national news. Obviously got our attention, and we as a community want to provide the best numerical guidance possible to our customers. So with that disaster comes, as Louis mentioned earlier, some opportunity. The government wants to try to make its weather services as robust as possible. And because of that, we have an opportunity here at NOAA to take supplemental resources to try to bolster our modeling capabilities. And this just represents, the color represents the different categories of funding that were provided by Congress to NOAA. The blue was funding that was given directly to the Weather Service. The green is what was called the Satellite Data Gap Mitigation, or given to NESDIS. And then the red is funding that was given to OAR for Laboratories and Cooperative Institutes. And each independent line shows a specific project that EMC is involved in. There's a lot of pressure here. A lot of pressure to perform, a lot of expectations. And we just started to hire people to work on these projects. But the good news is, along with pressure comes opportunity. All the partnerships that we have on the far left-hand side of this, I think it's really going to force, it's really going to give an opportunity for us to collaborate across the agency and even with academia in a meaningful way. Now, this is a two-year, these are two-year funding. This is going to come and go pretty quickly, but we have to strike while the iron's hot and build relationships and partnerships strategically with our collaborators across the NOAA laboratory. So a lot of pressure here, but I do believe this is an opportunity. Now, I will say the coordination, once we've got these projects identified, the coordination across line offices has been very impressive. It's taken a lot of time and energy to get things running, but it's moving us in the right direction. We're having conversations now about scientific issues that I don't think we've had as efficiently in the past. Okay, so this is what the production suite looks like outside the boxes, but going from time scales, minutes, hours, and days, and this is only growing with time. And so a lot of questions are, what is this thing going to look like in the future, in 2020, right? If the GFS is running at 13 kilometers by the end of this year, what does that mean for the NAM? If the GEFS is getting in higher and higher resolution, what does that mean for the SHREF? So things are starting to slide. And there's a requirement for worn-on forecast capability. Weather Ready Nation. What are we doing as a modeling community to satisfy those requirements? The focus on the high impact events. What kind of a numerical guidance system is required to handle high impact events? Drought, slow time scales. We also have fast time scales like blizzards and things like that. And then weather to climate, the sea and the suite of guidance and products. What kind of a guidance system is required to handle that? These are kind of questions that we have to look forward to and answer as we go through the next 5 to 10 years in our planning. And of course, sitting underneath all this is science and technology. Observing systems, high-performance computing, right? There's a lot of conversation about fine-grained technologies, GPUs, accelerators versus conventional CPU. What does that mean to the modeling enterprise? Data dissemination, that's a big topic. We're going to talk more about that later on tomorrow. The numerical guidance systems themselves, data simulation methodology, right? We moved off 3D VAR. We got a big increase in quality and skill through going to the EN 3D VAR. We expect the same jump when we go to 4D EN VAR.
Moving to a full 4D variational data simulation system right now is not in our future. We believe we get the most out of an EN4D VAR system. It's more computationally effective, efficient, and we don't need to build the adjoint models for the dynamic world. Modeling physics, coupling and dynamics, Earth system modeling, how complex does the system or the systems have to be to satisfy our emerging requirements for the guidance systems? Ensembles, moving away from deterministic systems, we know that. However, you can't forget that a deterministic system is a cornerstone of an ensemble system. The better the deterministic system is, the better the ensemble is going to be. It's that whole circle. And then intelligent post-processing. Again, we can't forget about what we need to do on the back end of the model screen. And then another problem, or I should say issue, is predictability. We can't forget about this fundamental science and the phenomena that we try to simulate. Convective systems, we're pushing our models to higher and higher resolution. The HER is going to be a 3-kilometer CONUS. Right now we're running the NAM with a 4-kilometer CONUS nest. What's the predictability of the systems that we think we're resolving? And that applies across all the scales, not just convective systems. So some of the commonly asked questions. Right? How will the suite evolve as the resolution of the global models increase? That's a very good question. Will the GFS be capable of satisfying the NAM requirements of today? Will the GEFS be capable of satisfying the Shrek requirements that it satisfies today? Non-hydrostatic global model and medium range forecast from GEFS are these new requirements. We need to build these into our decision-making process for planning of the production suite. And that requires science, people, high performance computing. Another question, will the regional system shift to convective permitting applications? All right, the NAM, the RAP, the ARW, the NMNV, will those be focused more on the convective permitting scales? Let the global models satisfy their current requirements for the CONUS and continental scales. The NARI and the HURRI, are those going to be capable of satisfying weather ready nation or Warnock forecast requirements? And then jumping back up scale, the week 3 to seasonal guidance system, what's that going to look like? You know, week 3 and 4, is there any predictability, useful information that we can get out there? Can or should the GEFS be extended to 30 days? Is coupling required if we extend it to 30 days? There are a lot of strong opinions on that. But we have to solicit input from all those opinions and make decisions. What level of complexity is required in CFS? Right? And when I talk about complexity, physics, aerosol, coupling, all those details that are scientifically important and technically important and complicated. And the last one, can the national multi-model ensemble system be developed and sustained? That's something Louis touched upon. I think we've been very creative in leveraging the academic community and some other federal agencies to develop a protocol and a convention to run these systems in near real time, provide input to the Climate Prediction Center. But is it really sustainable? That's a very important question. And then how does all these things impact downstream systems? So these are a lot of questions, just some of the questions that I get asked. And I think they're very important questions and things that we need to consider going forward. And when we were given estimates of what WCOS phase 2 would look like, whether it's 1.5 petabytes of petaflops or whether it's 2 petaflops, this is what we mapped out consulting with our colleagues. We didn't just develop this inside of EMC. But this is a quick look at what the production suite might look like in 2018. What's important is that you see the striping down here at the bottom. This is what we're moving towards with our ensemble-based systems for the CONUS. High resolution, they're going to be running 24/7. The RAP is an hourly, frequently updated system. The HERS hourly. CFS V3 running across the bottom. And then on top of the ensemble systems that run 24/7, you're going to have your more intermediate systems that run perhaps 4 times per day, the GFS, GDAS, the GEFS. And I'm not forgetting about our special applications like air quality, ozone, dispersion, ecosystems, bays, oceans, waves, tsunamis, space weather, all those things have to be embedded within the production system. So with that, I'm going to end and open this up for questions, but I just want to set the stage for it. We have got a lot of things in front of us. We've got a lot of opportunity. But we as a community need to get organized, because in the end, if it's going to become operational, it's got to fit in a box like this. And it's got to be interconnected in a very efficient and thoughtful way to make sure that we make the most of our resources available to us and provide the best quality product to the people who rely on this stuff to make decisions. So with that being said, I'm going to end it. And we have a couple minutes for questions.
Who has the other mic? Okay.
I was looking, is Jordan here?
Yeah.
Okay, so you didn't put me up to this. I just want you to know. Okay, so, you know, that diagram you had with the 9.0 or better, you know, in increasing frequency, great. That's something. But I think, and I'll try to hide my disappointment here, but keeping track of the dropouts is still something that you need to do. In October, yes, I was furloughed for 2.5 weeks, so I got to do a lot of things like track model performance every day. And there was a dropout in October, and it killed you for the whole month, killed us for the whole month compared to the rest of the systems. When you're doing those monthly scores, as soon as we lost that, when we got into November, as soon as we lost that two-day period, bang, right up there, 0.90 for the monthly score.
So,
So it's not just tracking the best forecast, it's tracking you. So it's point number one. Point number two, Bill Poe, I guess Chris Davis have been looking at. The other thing that happens with the GFS is it drops off on day 6 and 7 pretty precipitously compared to other models. And so Bill and Chris have been looking at that. And the reason I'm bringing that up is that they're tracing problems back to the Pacific. And when we have some of these dropouts, when I was cornered here as to why these things were dropping out, it always got back into the Pacific. In some cases, like a data. So I think it's really important that you actually track these things. Obviously, with the 3D hybrid system, we've had fewer of them. So clearly something happened there. Going to 4D will likely, improve that. But these scores, you're not going to get these monthly scores if we still have that dropout issue.
Can I get a word of advice to answer? We still track them. We model
evaluation. Yeah, I mean, obviously we track the performance in the GFS. We have weekly model evaluation group meetings.
All the people in the dropout.
Yeah, I mean, we do it.
Good.
And I would like to see, I'd like to see more folks in the academic community have access to our data and do systematic evaluation of the performance of the models. That'd be great. If we could find a way to engage them in an effective way, provide them funding to participate. So yeah, I think we're getting more aggressive in our ability to evaluate the performance of our modeling systems. We watch dropouts. I see them.
I never see them in these presentations.
I try not to. That's not. That's
not good. I want to say one more thing. This whole dropout thing.
This whole dropout thing started with a conversation with Tony Hollingsworth. And he emphasized to me and to others who were in the room at the time, if we didn't take care of that problem, we wouldn't catch up. He was very explicit about it. So, I think it needs to be shown. If you want to get the larger community engaged in this, keep on showing it.